Ali Bouzari is one of the smartest people in food. I mean, he literally has a PhD in food biochemistry and is a trained chef. But what's more important is that he's one of the most curious people in food. And when he told us he wanted to learn about Nigerian cuisine from the chef Shola Olumloyo, we knew we had to get them talking. Shola's lived all over the world and is a chef who's dazzled Philadelphia and the blogosphere for almost a decade with his super modern technique. But he's also dug deep into the culinary traditions of his family's native Nigeria. Here's their conversation.
Hey, Shola, welcome. I'm so excited that we got an excuse to talk to each other on microphones.
Well, thank you for having me. This is exciting.
So we're here to dive into Nigerian food specifically, because this is something that, until I met you and we started chatting, I had no understanding of this incredibly deep food culture of almost 200 million people. And before we get into the deep stuff, can you give us just like the stereotypical like paella, ramen, Belgian waffle level of what foods might commonly serve as shorthand for Nigerian cuisine?
Well, it's funny that you use those specific examples because there are, in fact, I think in every culture, and specifically in Nigeria, you know, ceremonial rice dishes are almost ubiquitous to every culture and every cuisine, from paellas to rishtefels to, you know, risottos and all those things, pilafs. In Nigeria, they have a specific dish, jollof rice, which is a big amalgam of rice and vegetables and meats. It's almost more directly, you know, genealogically similar to like a Valencia paella, you see? There are all kinds of fritters that would be like, you know, donut, savory or sweet. Puff puff is named for one, which is actually kind of maybe a derivative English, you know, double puff. It's just called a puff puff. And then there's a bean fritter, which is called akara, which is beans that have been soaked, skins removed, rubbed, added onions, chilies. It's a more complex and I think more delicious form of what would be a falafel, you see. And so all those things exist. We don't have a noodle culture, but we have a rice and other starches, cassava, you know, fermented, other grains that are ground into pulses and other things, yeah.
So it sounds like already there's rice, there's legumes, you mentioned chilies. It sounds like there's a lot going on, there's a lot of staples, and I know just from Wikipedia that Nigeria is very agriculturally robust. And then it kind of spans everything from the lower deserty savanna portion of the Sahara all the way into, I think, tropical rainforests and coasts, right? There's a lot going on in terms of ingredients.
Yes. By the time you go down to the Niger Delta, the area in the southwest, it's very rich, lush territory. There's tons of cocoa growing among all the vegetation. So, yeah, we have about five or six microclimates in Nigeria.
And just untold ingredients coming from all of those places.
Absolutely. You know, even though indigenously everyone's using it in the established traditional pathways, you know, my sort of view in the last few years and more so now is to sort of see how all those ingredients and flavors are able to be translated into the modern context without losing their soul.
Right. So before we get into the more modern-leaning, progressive uses for beans and cassava and sesame and ground nuts, which I believe is what Nigerians call peanuts. Can you tell us, can you give us just a brief primer on some of the go-to Nigerian cooking techniques? Like, is this a culture that is really into grilling or pressure cooking or long stewing?
So it's not, they're not inherently high-tech dependent preparations like pressure cooking. But every other established method of cooking food in the world applies to what Nigerian food is. You know, roasting, grilling, braising, steaming, except that, for example, those processes may involve more traditional vessels. You know, when we steam, we would make, there's a Nigerian dish that's called moin moin, M-O-I-N-M-O-I-N. And not all dishes are repetitive words, but those two happen to be. And it's basically a puree of soaked beans with some palm oil, all the spices, dried shrimp. And it is wrapped in banana leaves and then folded neatly into packages and then layered and steamed, just steamed over stalks of banana leaves. And this would be almost similar to like a, on a delicate side, a chawanmushi, on a more firm side, a Mexican tamale that would have been done in a corn husk. But the ingredients are natively Nigerian. We do a lot of interesting things that I'm not quite sure how they ended up in West Africa. Maybe they are indigenous. Like some stews have meats fried before they are stewed. And I don't mean like the typical French, you know, sear a short rib and then transfer it to like red wine and demi-glace or beef stock, you see? But right. It's like a deep fry that's crispy. So it almost starts to see, the closest correlation I can see for it is the Cuban dishes like vaca frita, you know, where the meat is still stringy but still braised and stewed. So we share a lot of techniques with, you know, and I'm not a movement of people expert, but like the movement of people through the slave trade, through West Africa, through the Caribbean, the West Indies, and into the southern part of the United States, I see some correlations in the same techniques. Yes.
And so there's some shared fingerprints going back through time that you can see. You can see the trails that all of these techniques forged all over the world.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we just try to express them in Nigeria in more primal forms, you know, cooking on charcoal, cooking on wood, using native plants to be vessels, calabash, pumpkin seeds, all those things. Yeah.
So where are the test kitchens of Nigeria? Like, where are all of these ideas forged? Is there a long history of cooking in royal courts, or is there a lot of street food? Are family cooks more prominent than restaurant cooks in kind of the Nigerian culinary consciousness?
Nigeria's culinary consciousness hasn't really developed a kind of a culinary class, you know, as you've seen in other countries, you know, with food networks and, you know, Michelin stars and all those things. It's a very native cuisine. In fact, in many ways, Nigeria hasn't had royal courts per se like you would see in India or Egypt or places like that. The food is an intrinsic family experience. It's about eating dinner together on Sundays. It's about weddings. It's about births. It's about, you know, christenings. All the ceremonial aspects of life and religion are the primary drivers of ceremonial cuisine in Nigeria as opposed to actual ceremony. You know, maybe a little bit Christmas, New Year's, but otherwise they're mostly human stories and feeding the people who are part of them, their friends, and their attendees. You know, I think if That's you go amazing. To a Nigerian wedding, it's just almost like comically absurd, the amount of people and the amount of food that is actually cooked.
So family style may be redundant as a descriptor.
It's like, it's like extended family style in Nigeria.
That's amazing.
Dinner with like 100 people, you know.
Yeah.
So cauldrons, yeah.
I love that. I caught that you mentioned, I think, dried shrimp. Can you tell us a little bit about the way that Nigerian cooks traditionally and contemporarily preserve and ferment food? It's always interesting to see that cross-section of climate, economics, religion, depending on whether a culture wants to ferment stuff into booze or whether they're trying to cure things to bring out umami for a largely vegetarian diet. It's a nice litmus test for a culture. So can you tell us a little bit about Nigerian preservation of food?
Nigerian preservation is very similar to regions of the world that have the same climate and geography. And for me, that would be like Southeast Asia, you know, Thailand and Malaysia. You know, like in the delta areas of Nigeria, let's deal with fish first, because, you know, fish does not last forever. You either eat it fresh,
or
you have to just actively start preserving it in some way, whether it's salted, whether it's dried, whether it's mixed with other things to allow it to ferment a little, and then it's dried into paste, you know, fish sauce, shrimp paste, all those things. So that's how it's treated in Nigeria. And then they become secondary umami components for more complex dishes. They're vegetarian leafy stews that require you to use dried shrimp for them to taste good. So the concept of one being a vegetarian, even when one exclusively eats vegetables in Nigeria, is like non-existent. There's going to be dried shrimp in your, like your, you know, your, you know, almost like a spinach type green stew, you know, because it just adds depth. So I think for the cuisine of Nigeria, the primary driver of preservation was longevity, being able to save food for different times a year. But then secondarily, when people became aware of also the depth of flavor that those ingredients create, that became a process.
You just spent a number of sentences describing all the different ways that Nigerians generate umami. And
yes.
that is a personal passion of mine, is tracing savoriness around the world. And I think that's surprising that West Africa is another cradle of understanding of savoriness and umami. And it's not just East Asia. It's not just Japan and Thailand and parts of China. It's an amazing Rosetta Stone.
One of the ingredients that has one of the deepest depths of flavor to add to a dish is the fermented locust bean, which grows around various parts of West Africa. I mean, they call it like Iru, they call it Dawa Dawa in different countries. But just the aroma alone, it smells like somebody kind of mixed chocolate with Marmite. You know?
Wow.
Just actual locust beans fermented. Yeah.
So, Shola, I love talking to you because the first time we met, you introduced me to some of these ideas inherent to Nigerian food in a way that usually takes people a long time to get to. So rather than, here are the five mother sauces of Nigeria and they must be used as prescribed, blah, 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 you immediately jumped into, like, here's 10 different uses that I just thought of for peanut flour that we use as a thickener. Here's a marinade that's similar to Mexican adobo. You're incredibly forthcoming in giving immediate and very approachable context. Is that a Nigerian thing or just a Shola thing? Like, are Nigerians as protective as how things, quote unquote, should be as Italians might be with their DOP pizzas?
Well, yeah, so it is the same. And that's funny you say, because I just had this conversation in Italy after roaming around for a month. Nigerians are both very nationalistic and want to preserve the native food as what it is. You know, not too many changes, maybe a different vessel. However, you know, people are now becoming aware for the future of a cuisine to evolve, you have to be subject to some variation and experimentation. And people are now only becoming a bit more open to the use of Nigerian ingredients in less traditional forms. But you're still able to make delicious food that speaks to the soul of Nigeria. It happens to end up in a middle gray area where Nigerians are like, well, this isn't really Nigerian. And then Westerners are like, I've never had anything like this before. So even if it's not Nigerian, you know, it's new to me. It's really new to us, you know. That gray area is a ripe landscape of creativity for me. And I kind of take ingredients in general as a line item list of, you know, items with, you know, various attributes, astringency, saltiness, funk, umami. So I can still stay and weave within a certain cuisine something interesting that is not traditional. And in order for me to explain to outsiders, and by that I mean like non-Nigerians, Westerners, like how do I get this food, you know, without removing and removing their preconceived notions of the food of Black Africa, I just had to come up with some ideas like, okay, so you have things like this. It's just that the elements of flavor are slightly different. Jollof rice is basically a paella. Akara is basically a falafel. If I nixtamalize white beans in Nigeria, which I have done, strangely, and it's beautiful, it works great, It can end up being like almost like something you fry into a latke, you know? So there are many ways to explain. It's the words and the origin that's intimidating. So for me, if I can find a familiar item that allows people to understand what I'm talking about, I think it works that way.
And you clearly have a pretty amazing gift for thrumming on these threads that link countries and cultures and food ways. And American chefs probably wasted the better part of a century thinking that fish sauce was only for putting in East Asian dishes. And
yes,
we finally got over that, and it's in marinara, and it's in a cheese dip, and now we know that it's Nigerian as well. Can you help us jump into these higher levels of thinking where we can just start to incorporate Nigerian food and ideas into our daily lives quicker? Like, would you mind sharing maybe one or two gateways, books, restaurants, go-to techniques or ingredients that listeners could incorporate into their lives to get a Nigerian starter kit?
Well, so there's nothing really ultimately simple that you can do and just make. One of the most common street snacks in Nigeria is suya, S-U-Y-A. And suya is a basically grilled beef. It's mostly beef on a stick, like almost like a kebab of some sort. And it's cooked in wood and charcoal. So now, I'm sure you can go into any major American city, like, you know, definitely in Philadelphia, definitely in New York, where there are West African stores. There are lots in D.C. And you can just go buy a bag of suya spice. And it's just a powder. It's peanut-based. Word of warning. If you're allergic to peanuts, you do not want to eat this. You cut meat into thin strips. You dust it heavily with the flour. If you want to give it a bit more luxury like I do, I spray it with a little bit of peanut oil. And just grill it directly on, you know, on skewers, on a rack with charcoal or wood. Even if you do it in your oven, it would be quite delicious. But the primal flavors of meat and, you know, obviously not natural fire makes it what it is in Nigeria. Even in the most, it's street food. In the most basic shacks, it's always cooked on wood or charcoal, you know, because gas is a commodity. Strangely for an OPEC producing country. But
so it sounds like suya might be a perfect gateway drug for getting into Nigerian cooking for an avid home cook. So Shola, can you explain to us a little bit about what suya is and what the keys are to doing it right?
Well, suya is all about the spice, and it actually involves a process that's actually unique to Nigeria. Like, nobody else does it in the world. And the process is that peanuts are mashed with a mortar and pestle, and always non-mechanically, they're mashed till they turn into a very thick paste. It takes quite a bit of effort. And then they're put in almost like muslin, a cloth, and it is squeezed for a significant amount of time till as much of the oil comes out as possible. And when that is done, the peanut meal that's left has a little bit of water mixed into it. It is formed into little patties, and then it is fried. And it becomes this crusty little, you know, flat pellets. That is something in Africa referred to as kuli kuli, K-U-L-I-K-U-L-I. And that is what forms the basis of the spice mix. So to that, other native peppers, chilies, garlic, onion are added, you know, and that becomes the basis of the suya spice. And it has a very particular flavor. It's an interesting fermented peanut flavor, but it is still peanut nonetheless. And that is simply just dusted on meat with a little salt, and it is grilled. That's it. Most of the engineering and the work is in the production of the spice. Otherwise, it's just, you know, dip meat in it and grill it, yeah.
So the actual home implementation of the suya spice is like cooking with miso, right, where there's a process leading up to you opening the bag in a lot
exactly.
of instances.
Exactly. I would not, you cannot make kuli kuli at home. You just can't. No Nigerians make it at home. You should go to a store and buy it.
Shola, thank you so much for coming on. This was fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Shola Olunloyo is the chef owner of Studio Kitchen in Philadelphia. And our contributor, Ali Buzari, is the author of Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food.